Okay, we are going to start. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you are. You are almost welcome to this webinar. I am Elsie Tigulima Radde, the Vice President of AfriHealth. I would like to recognize everybody who is here. Thank you so much for coming. Special recognition for our President. Abigail, thank you for joining. This is an important webinar, and I'm so privileged to be your moderator this evening. For me, it's evening in Kampala. It's also my pleasure to welcome our esteemed speakers. I will introduce them as we go along. And for all of you who are participating, there will be an opportunity to make comments or ask questions. You can use the chat, and at the end, I'll give an opportunity to some of you to say something. Africa has experienced an increase, a big increase actually, in the number of health professions, education institutions, and some of them have state-owned or government-owned, but many of them are actually private. So the need for accreditation cannot be discounted. And this is not just for Africa, but globally. Accreditation is not an end in itself. It's like taking a biopsy. When you take a biopsy, it helps you to get a diagnosis for the condition and for the institution in the case of accreditation. And this helps one to look at their relevancy, ensure quality and equity, and also ensure that you have quality improvement at your institution. And regulation is like policing, but positive policing, because it makes us better. So I believe that you agree that this is an important webinar for us, especially at this time in Africa. And we are so privileged to have esteemed speakers to make presentations, to give us a guide as to how to start this conversation and continue talking about it in our region. So we are going to begin with one of our own from our continent. And he excused me already for not pronouncing his name right. Gosietlelape, the president of the Health Professions Council of South Africa, is the one who is going to begin. And it's really great to have you here, Prof. And the floor is now yours. Please go ahead and make your presentation. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for the invitation, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good day to all. Just to correct a few things. One, I'm not a professor, I'm just a doctor. Secondly, I am now the outgoing president of the Health Professions Council. I'm in a position like Donald Trump, where there'll be an incumbent coming out later, but I'm still holding the fort because the person will only be appointed to office next week. So I'm the outgoing president of the council. And for me, I would like us to have a conversation rather than an academic discussion. Now, the issue of accreditation of the health workforce, in Africa, there'll be two components. The accreditation of the training institutions themselves and the accreditation of the healthcare professionals. I will start first with the institutions. The biggest challenge that we have is that because they are educational institutions, there's a role for the education ministry in terms of establishment of an educational institution. But because they are healthcare professionals, the training platform is largely under the control of the Ministry of Health. So in most countries, you'll see a combination of both. In others, it is under education, In other countries, it is under health. In others, there's a bite from both. Now, in terms of the health facilities, the licensing of the health facilities is done by the Ministry of Health. The licensing of the educational institution is done by the Ministry of Education. And in South Africa in particular, the training platform for healthcare professionals is largely funded by the Ministry of Health because it lies in hospitals. But there's also a component that's in universities, so the staff would be joint appointments in the teaching hospitals. Now, the challenge that we face is that in Africa, that we do not have independent accreditors. So people that would be independent of the Ministry of Health and independent of the institution and their purpose built for accreditation of institutions. In the US, they have institutions like that. In the UK, they have institutions like that. In Africa, for the healthcare professionals, you have regulatory bodies that will regulate the training and the accreditation of the healthcare professionals. In terms of the education side, it will be done by the ministry in conjunction with the regulatory body if it exists. In many parts of Africa, the regulating aspect is almost like a department inside the Ministry of Health. In other countries, there's greater independence of the regulatory authority, but there is participation in most institutions, in most of sub-Saharan Africa. The people that sit in the regulatory body are appointed by the Ministry of Health with a certain level of independence. The CEOs of the regulators are largely appointed by the Ministries of Health. Some are actually employees inside the ministry. In a few occasions, it's independent. One of the key issues that we face in Africa is what I would call the private-public dichotomy. When you have public institutions, those are institutions that are basically state-funded. So the state is accrediting itself, in a sense. When you have private institutions, sometimes they bypass the regulatory mechanism. Some are even accredited by bodies outside country, like Joint Commission International, if they are appropriately resourced and they have partners from outside. So it is important in country that there be coherence between the education ministry and the health ministry in terms of accreditation of institutions. Otherwise, it becomes a tug of war. Otherwise, institutions get a double whammy where they now have to be accredited by education and by health. And these processes are tedious, time-consuming, and costly. So we need to create a framework of coherence. We need to create a framework where standards are set up as to what are you accrediting? What is the standard that you're doing? Right now, it is all over the place. And the lack of an independent authority that is appropriately and properly resourced, whose main purpose is to accredit, whose main credentials is to be having the ability and the resources to be able to accredit, is an Achilles heel in Africa. We find that the regulator is also the accreditor. They regulate the profession. So in most countries in Africa, it becomes almost like a one-stop shop. You have the medical council in Kenya that will be doing the accreditation of training, accrediting the professionals themselves, accrediting the training institutions. So it's a one-stop shop. It becomes a problem because of poor management of conflicts of interest. So in South Africa, let me give you an example. In the country that I stay in, we rely on expertise from the institutions to provide us with the workforce and the knowledge to be able to do accreditation. So in a sense, the institutions are accrediting themselves. We try and make it a distance because the accreditation teams are assembled by the regulator with strict terms of reference, and they need to go out and to do the accreditation. And I must commend most of our academics that they are doing a good job of multitasking, of ensuring that when they are doing the job for the regulator, when they are acting as an accreditor, they try and do it objectively. But it is something that we need to work on to create totally independent, properly resourced accreditation institutions to accredit, in particular, the training institutions. In terms of the healthcare personnel, the regulators are doing a job that's not a bad job, but there's also great areas of improvement. And I think the biggest challenge in terms of accreditation of professionals is being able to ensure that the regulators are able to, as best practice, have a licensing exam that they offer for licensees. Currently, most institutions rely on the examinations that are done at an institutional basis. In South Africa, we have 10 medical schools. So we basically accredit the medical schools, approve their curriculum, but each university sets its own exam. We recognize that exam and we register people based on that exam. At a specialist level, we've been able to create a common exit exam that trainees in all the training institutions have to write. Ideally, we need to do the same at an undergraduate level, that you come out with an educational qualification, you go into internship or into the training platform, and you then do a common licensing exam. And if we are able to do that in Africa, we would also be able to have a solution for the problem of licensing of foreign qualified doctors. If you have a common exam in country, it's easy to make it compulsory for those from outside to go through that common exam. So we have a common assessment tool for people that come from outside, but we don't have a common assessment tool for institutions that are inside. We have many countries in Africa that don't have medical schools. We have a lot that have a single or two medical schools. So for them, that is their common exam. Now, Bill will talk about this issue of global standards. And for, the World Federation of Medical Education will talk about globalization. Part of the challenge that we have in Africa is that you'll find that there may be advanced systems in terms of medical education, the education for doctors, but it is not uniform. Then you have other healthcare professionals that have separate statutory bodies, that have a totally separate mechanism for accrediting the training institution, for accreditation of the professionals. Now, one of the things that is becoming a problem for us in Africa is not having adequate healthcare professionals, not enough pharmacists, not enough doctors, not enough nurses, the issue of task shifting, which then creates a challenge in terms of accreditation. Now, when you look at what, for lack of a better term, you might call mid-level workers, you have a challenge in terms of nomenclature. You also have a challenge in terms of approval of training programs and accreditation of those training programs. It is all over the place. In some places like Kenya, they have their own regulatory body. In places like South Africa, they will be part of the Health Professions Council and medical accreditation. In some instances, there might be mid-level workers that would be under the nursing fraternity. So ideally, what we need to be looking into is to create an apex structure, but it should only be an oversight structure. It should not be a structure that prescribes how you train a nurse, how you train a dentist, how you train a doctor. Those should be left to the individual professional bodies and the individual regulatory bodies and the individual training institutions. But in terms of health workforce management and creating the healthcare team, there needs to be an oversight body so that there's a referee as we fight for scopes of practice. Now, a few words about private institutions. The private institutions create a challenge that is different for different countries. In South Africa, we don't make a distinction as to whether you are a public or private institution. We've created a framework of conditions to be met, to be accredited for training undergraduates or for postgraduate training. And we are indifferent as to whether you are publicly funded or privately funded. There are challenges for private institutions, particularly at the undergraduate level, in terms of the necessary clinical platforms. But where private institutions are being used, they are being used by our public training facility as an extension of their training platform. But in other jurisdictions, private hospitals are able to get accreditation and private medical institutions are available. In the nursing fraternity in South Africa, we've had a lot of private nursing institutions. The biggest challenge about private institutions is clinical exposure for their student cohorts. They do not have enough of a clinical training platform to be able to provide adequate education that meets standards. So what we're hoping to do through AMCOA is to ensure that we create common standards in Africa, we create regional structures, and all of us in other regions are learning for what has been done in West Africa, and in particular, what has been done in East Africa, where the Eastern African communities have come together and they have a common accreditation platform across 5 or 6 participating countries. So they will accredit the training institutions and they are able to improve safety to the public because it is done without fear or favor. But that requires government buy-in and Ministry of Health buy-in, because you will have an institution in a country that now does not meet accreditation standards that needs to be de-accredited. And it can pose challenges if there's no political buy-in. The last thing that I want to talk about is the challenges where the training platforms are also the service platforms. And it creates difficulty because sometimes you might not meet standards for accreditation as a training institution, but you can't be closed down because you are a service platform. And you may meet the standards to provide services to the general public. So there's a clear distinction about accreditation of training institutions, which is left to the regulatory bodies. But accreditation of service providers is not something that is usually done by the accreditor for training institutions. And sometimes there's a gap that is sometimes exploited. And you need to have an authority that can fill the job of doing the continuum, where the service platforms are also accredited to be appropriate for servicing the population. And when that is not done well, you then have service provision of varying standards. Chair, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity. I hope we will just be beginning a conversation in terms of where we should go. And hopefully, through your organization and through the regulatory councils, we will create common standards, not only in the continent, but in the globe. And hopefully, we will move towards the aviation standards, where as a pilot, you can land a plane anywhere in the world. And we'd hope as a healthcare professional, if you're a nurse, you can nurse anywhere. If you're a dentist, you can do dental work anywhere. And if you're a doctor, you should be safe to practice in any part of the globe. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for that presentation. You've given us an overview of what is happening in the region and also what is happening in South Africa. Thank you so much. I'd like to ask the participants to continue posting comments and questions in the on the chat box. We shall keep an eye on that and we'll have a time for discussion later. So thank you so much. We'll go on to our second speaker. and that is Dr. William Pinsky, President and CEO of ECFMG FEMA and Chair Board of Trustees of FEMA. I'm so glad to have you here, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank FEMA for their contribution to my understanding of health professions education. I'm a FEMA fellow. You are welcome, Dr. Pinsky.
Thank you, Elsie. Let me share my screen here. Can everybody see that? Okay. Sorry for the delay there. A couple things before I get started. I want to really thank and congratulate AFRI Health. Thank you for the invitation to be here today. And I congratulate you on all the efforts of continuing education throughout the pandemic. I've monitoring the emails and the various programs that you all have been organizing, and I really commend you for doing this. Dr. Lavape's presentation, I think, has done a very good job of setting the foundation of some of the important aspects of accreditation and regulation, particularly in Africa. And these are very important things to keep in mind. There certainly are a lot of challenges, particularly working across a large continent like Africa. One of the important things to keep in mind, however, is how crucial this activity is to be done properly as we continue to assure the public that the individuals who are caring for them, and again, whether it's physicians, nurses, dentists, or anybody in the health professions, that they are appropriately educated and trained for the services that they're providing. I've been asked today to talk about, primarily to talk about the symposium that we hosted along with the World Health Organization last December. Frankly, it seems like it was about 10 years ago, well, with everything else that's been going on in the interim. So I'm going to talk today about the symposium itself, some of the priority actions and recommendations that have come out of that, and then briefly talk about our vision for medical school accreditation. And I hope that will be a good segue into David Gordon's discussion that will follow mine. Last December, we were fortunate to be able to partner with the World Health Organization have a several-day discussion about workforce accreditation and regulation. The lead behind it and the one who organized the activities from ECFMG FAMER is Bill Burdick, and I see that Bill is on the call today, and I'm sure that Bill will probably have some comments, but it was his work with the WHO that put together what I think was a very innovative conference to discuss something that is extremely important. We actually had 250 attendees that represented 58 countries across the world. Quite a diverse group, and this created quite a diverse conversation. The diversity was also represented by the type of work the participants do, ranging from government ministries of health and education, regulatory and accrediting bodies, professional associations, educational associations, and various other non-governmental organizations and societies. The purpose of of the conference was really to take a global perspective on policies and strategies that are currently being employed and could be employed in reference to accreditation of health education institutions, as well as the regulation of health professions. Clearly, these are important determinants in being able to continue to grow a qualified, quality professional healthcare workforce globally. Some of the African leadership that were there from AfriHealth, others from Africa attended, but particularly from AfriHealth are on the slide here. And Elsie, it was good to see you and Abigail at the conference. So the structure was very innovative. And again, this was Bill Burdick's brainchild working with our colleagues from the WHO. There actually were four plenary sessions that were thematic in terms of how to approach this issue. And they were followed by breakout sessions, which very much followed up on the discussions and worked on the messaging from that. And the four sessions were very logical, frankly, in terms of discussing what exists today. And again, this is globally across the world. What do we see as present and future challenges? What has been working? And frankly, probably what has not been working? And then, you know, where are the gaps? What needs to be done in the future? At the end of the conference, the last plenary session dealt with actions and further discussions. This was further work on knowledge sharing, the normative development in terms of how things can proceed, where does accountability lie, and then what type of research would be pertinent. So I'm going to go through the four plenary sessions, starting with what exists. And this is obviously a very high level summary of this. Not surprising, there are varied systems of accreditation and regulation. And Dr. Lapi referred to some of that just in Africa alone. There are mandatory systems and voluntary systems. Some countries make it a voluntary effort or activity, which certainly can cause some situations. Sometimes this regulatory work is done by governmental, and sometimes they're non-governmental independent organizations. And then, of course, there are variability in standards and process. And I think this variability is something that's really important to recognize that. Yes, there should be local cultural applications. Everything really comes down to being local, and that never should be lost. On the other hand, we should all also hold ourselves, no matter where we are in the world, to this type of standards that should be met in order to assure the public that they're receiving proper healthcare and process. It was interesting that, frankly, almost all the countries that were represented at the symposium had regulatory bodies for what we referred to as the Big Five. So that would be doctors, dentists, nurses, pharmacists, and even midwives. However, there is extreme variability when we start talking about other occupational groups who are involved in healthcare provision. So the next session then dealt with present and future challenges. Some of these may seem obvious, but even the obvious sometimes are worth a discussion. To start off with, And I know Dr. Lapi just referred to private and public institutions. It's the same thing for on the accreditation side of things. And how do they evaluate the private and the public? We've seen a huge expansion of educational programs across the world from a physician perspective, from medical school education. Over the last 10 years, a massive increase in the number of medical schools. And we're in a situation where there are silos of accreditation. And this gets back to, again, to Dr. Lapi's statement about the future should be individuals being able to move across borders and be able to practice wherever they've come from. But with jurisdictional silos and separate regulatory bodies, it makes this very difficult if the standards are not the same throughout. And on top of this, while we're working very diligently with the medical professions, there are unregulated occupations that also are involved. Clearly, resources are important. There are countries that have more resources, countries that have less resources. How can a model be developed that all countries can participate in? All health professions, at least pre-pandemic, saw that individuals were moving more and more across borders, not just doctors, and sometimes even just within the continent. I believe in Africa, there's quite a bit of movement among countries just within Africa. And then there's different ways that are developing in terms of how healthcare services are delivered. And as patients become, or the population becomes more educated, they have different expectations and are looking to hold us to standards. So from a priority perspective, you know, what should be taking place out there? Number one, can we define global standards? I think that performance improvement and quality improvement tells us that there should be best practices, and how can we all get together to aim for best practices? This will enhance the quality. It will help with priorities within health systems. And we always, as I mentioned before, need to remember that what we enact have to be adaptable to the local context. It is also important, can we develop a community of practice within the accreditation regulation world, where we can work together across the world to promote information sharing and evidence generation? This can occur with multi-stakeholder collaboration. It helps even today by having this symposium and raising the issues. It would be possible through this community of practice to map accreditation and regulatory models in the different countries. We can drive awareness and help to bolster the political will for regulation and accreditation. I think that particularly within the pandemic, we've been developing and using new communication channels like today, and how can that be further developed to enhance our achieving the goals? And then what's really important is to share information about individual healthcare workers and validity of their credentials as they move across borders. I know at ECFMG FAMR, that's something that has been very important for us, that we have been working with over 20 countries around the world as we help them with the primary source verification of physicians. And now we're starting to work with dentists who are moving across borders in order to help the countries and their regulatory bodies to be assured that they have the proper credentials. From a knowledge sharing perspective, there obviously are key concepts. You know, this will sound very redundant, but it's such an important point. It's worth repeating over and over again. And that's that whatever global framework can be developed, it does need to emphasize the local context. There needs to be representation from a range of health occupations. Various ministries in the government need to be involved, not just education and health. Treasury and finance are important, again, because there need to be the resources to be successful. And we always have to be watching to assure the public of their healthcare workers. Another way to say that is to address the public good. And regulation and practice can be and should be aligned by having proper involvement with stakeholders. Some of the action items are identified relative to these concepts include having commentary available through publications. Live stream conferences have started. I think Bill put in a chat message earlier in the conference for a website connection, and to organize sessions on benefits of accreditation and regulation in partnership, you know, through the World Health Assembly. From a normative development perspective, where do we need to establish these norms, standards, and how do we have guidance put in place to support these? And what organizations are best suited to work with that? And we'll hear from David Gordon in just a little bit in terms of the recognition of the accreditation bodies for medical schools globally. So that norms can be addressed from a standards perspective in terms of background, meaning education of the healthcare providers, how they work from an ethical perspective and competency, obviously. And then how are individuals monitored to be assured that they continue to deliver the quality healthcare, and what kind of processes can be put in place so that countries and the public can enforce the standards. And then where does the accountability lie? You know, what are the mandates and principles behind the accountability, and how do we define those objectives? Can we assess the systems that are out there in place? And what will benefit us the most is a clear process for data collection, management, and sharing. And what we're really talking about when, you know, at the end of the day is quality assurance, external quality assurance to institutions, as well as internal quality assurance with real-time ongoing monitoring and data of practitioners. And at the end of the day, none of this will work unless we're all committed to work together globally. Is so important. Some of the actions identified is to be able to enact this is to get individuals together in task groups, have a platform to integrate practitioners. Technology needs to be employed to support real-time data. Eventually, perhaps an independent body to support the monitoring and evaluation. I guess challenge that the World Federation of Medical Education is that type of body for medical school accreditation agencies. And then how do we communicate and pass information around the world? Clearly, there should be more and continued research in this area. This is a very important area to be able to develop knowledge, whether it involves institutions, individuals, community needs, and to be to understand and see what the results of accreditation are, improving the quality of that program, and frankly, from my perspective, how that then translates into improvement of the delivery of healthcare globally. You know, I think a common understanding around the world of knowing what agencies are there, how they work together, database, particularly in terms of medical schools, that WIFME, perhaps through the World Directory of Medical Schools, and then other regulators and around the world are important. I'm going to segue just for a moment and talk about the ECFMG FAMER vision for accreditation of medical schools around the world. And many of you are probably familiar with this. But in 2010, the then ECFMG board passed a resolution that said that individuals applying for ECFMG certification will be required to graduate from a medical school that has been accredited appropriately by an accrediting agency that is formally recognized. This gets to back to the point of having common standards around the world. Because of the pandemic, the board has revised the resolution to make this a requirement for 2024. And depending on the resolution or the improvement of the pandemic, it is possible that the date could be extended even further. While the board in taking this action was thinking primarily of individuals coming to the United States who are going to be continuing their education, what really has occurred, and this is what has me very enthusiastic, is the fact that countries are seeing this as a way to improve the quality of their medical education and, as a result, the quality of their healthcare delivery. The World Federation of Medical Education, in conjunction with the Korean universities, sponsored a conference in Seoul, I think about 18 months ago. I frankly lost track of time, that was attended by many countries who are not interested and have never sent individuals to the United States to further their education, but see this as a very important aspect to improve healthcare. And I'm sure David is going to talk about that. And so I really feel that our accreditation requirement goals have stimulated international accreditation efforts as we all want to enhance the quality of medical education and again, assure the public that their practitioners are appropriately trained. I'm counting on David to talk about where we are in terms of the accrediting agencies and the progress made with this. So I'm gonna skip over this for right now and have many references for you in our slides. My slides will be available for people to take with them. Thank you again for the opportunity to be part of this program. And I look forward to the questions. Thank you, Elsie.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pinsky, for that presentation and giving us a synopsis of what took place in Istanbul, Turkey. It was a very good meeting and a very good discussion, plenty of participation. And Bill has shared with us a link in the chat box that people can take with them after this and have a look. So thank you so much. We go on to our next presenter, and this is David Gordon, the president of the World Federation for Medical Education. Please go ahead, David.
Elsie, thank you for that kind introduction. It's a very great pleasure to be here, and I'm going to attempt straight away to share my screen. Let's hope it's quicker than when, yes. As I say, it's a very great pleasure to be here. By here, I'd much rather be in Africa than in London, from where I'm talking now, where the skies are grey and I have to have a warm fire to keep me comfortable. And I'm going to talk about the World Federation guidelines on accreditation, but I'm going to give you a little bit of preliminary. I'm going to just give an explanation of the World Federation and what it does, looking after databases, standards for medical education, and accreditation, and many other things too. I'm going to give you a perspective, a personal, and maybe it's a World Federation perspective on medical education at the moment during the pandemic. And then I'm going to talk about accreditation and the situation in Africa and more internationally, and about the World Federation recognition of accreditation program. One of the questions that came up in the chat a little while for, was from Dr. Nyoni, who said, who accredits the accrediting agencies? So I hope that in part we will answer that. But first of all, about the World Federation, our job is to try and enhance the quality of medical education worldwide. We are in official relation with WHO as the non-state actor representing medical education and medical schools all over the world. We were founded by them and the World Medical Association in 1972. So we will be 50 years old in 2 years' time, and we will have a very great party to celebrate that, which will be in Cairo. Disclaimer that I always put in this is to make the point that we are primarily concerned with the quality and the management of the organization and the funding and the politics of medical education, not the detail of medical education, not how you deliver a lecture or how you run a problem-based group. The analogy I like to give is that we're sitting looking at medical education as a whole in the same way that the dean of the medical school looks at his or her school and how is it run? Is the money all right? Are we getting on all right with the healthcare system? And there are other people who actually run the course. Now, the governing body is the Executive Council. Here they are when they last met in person at the meeting that Bill referred to a moment ago in Celle in early 2019. And I won't show you everybody who's on the slide, but you can see that we are genuinely a very international organization. I'll only point out one person who, as we are in Africa, is Professor Olubunmi from Ibadan, who is the president of the Association of Medical Schools in Africa. And he very kindly invited us to have our next Executive Council meeting in Ibadan, and we were due to go there a few months ago, and for obvious reasons, sadly, we could not. But we will get there soon. The other organisations that are represented, ECFMG, there is Dr. Pinsky, the World Health Organization, the World Medical Association. A very important member is the International Federation of Medical Students Associations. If you want a really good quality question to be raised at the Executive Council meeting, it's almost always the student who does raise it. I'll mention two of the many other organisations with whom we work closely. One is FEMA, who, if you like, are very closely related to ECFMG, and a lot of our activity is done with them. And as an example relevant to today, this is the logo of CEDMEF, the Conference of Medical Schools of French-speaking countries. I'll come back to them later. The other members of the committee represent all the regions of WHO, and they're the same as the WHO regions, and the World Federation regions are the same, and the map is relevant to a slide later on. Our job is to try and enhance the quality of medical education, and this is the homepage, the front of our website, very easy to find, www.wfme.org, and accreditation, standards for medical education, and the World Directory of Medical Schools. And these three projects are, of course, interrelated. Are they relevant here? Well, we need to know where medical schools in the world are, and it's not just a list of good medical schools. Even more, we need to know where the bad medical schools are, and there are plenty of bad medical schools. This is my example here, one country in Europe with a population of 6 million, and many more than 20 medical schools, almost all of them terrible. A country of 6 million does not need 20 medical schools. These are a racket stealing money from young people who'd like to get a medical degree and who will not get a worthwhile medical degree. So we need to know where the bad schools are. Standards for medical education, those are obviously important wherever we are working. And accreditation, how do we know that the medical school is actually working as it should? How do we know that the curriculum, the program of education is suitable? And accreditation actually allows us independently to evaluate that. So all of these things are relevant to us today and to a meeting like this in Africa. Now, I'm just going to move to talking a little bit about medical education during the pandemic. Not that this is the main subject, but I think it's one that I've often been asked about. And although as I've said before, our primary concern is not the detail of education. We do provide standards for education, and we have a team working on standards for distributed learning in medicine, which is highly relevant to how medical schools are having to work at the moment. However, there are many things that give me cause for concern. This was reported in the Guardian newspaper back in July, and someone was writing about a teaching method at the Imperial College Medical School in London. And he said that the innovation was sparked by the pandemic. Hospitals have tried to minimize the risk of infection by preventing anyone who does not need to be there, including students. And the pandemic resulted for the first time in living memory that medical education has been limited by having no access at all to patients. Now, when I read this the first time, I read it with alarm because, and I actually reject it completely, speaking personally, the idea that we can try and teach medicine with medical students having no access at all to patients is just crazy, because when they come to the end of the course, they will have to have access to patients. How do they learn if they have not learned how to take a history from a patient, how to examine the patient, how to do the best for the patient? And I've seen there's other literature on this. This is a paper in the Annals of Internal Medicine, writing about the way that the AAMC has instructed medical schools to suspend clerkships. And the authors of this paper disagree with the AAMC. They say that medical schools should offer students clinical opportunities that would benefit patient care and potentially help to prevent workforce shortages. In other words, students need to see patients even at difficult times when we have to be very careful of how we protect our students and our patients. And this is another quotation, which I'll read in rather more fully, saying that because we are healthcare professionals, we seek opportunities to help patients, even though it's safer to stay at home. And we have the instinct to run towards difficult and dangerous situations rather than running away. And that's the result of our character and education. That's what doctors do. And we, when we were students, watched our teachers do the same. And our students are already showing that they know that they really have a duty to learn and to help patients, even with the most terrible illness, such as we are seeing at the moment. So our goal is to finding ways to, as safely as possible, integrate students into the work healthcare system. We use the pandemic as a teaching moment while everyone is delivering care. And that is a quotation from a paper in the Wisconsin Medical Journal back in March. So that's enough about teaching at the moment. And I'm now going to move on more explicitly to the kind of work that the World Federation done. And in accreditation, let's be quite clear, what is being measured and how is it being measured? And we are measuring the medical education program. Is it suitable? Is the medical school competent? What are we measuring it against? Does it meet the agreed standards? And so we have to have standards for medical education. We have to say what our medical schools should be doing. And there are many standards. These are the standards in the UK from the General Medical Council. There's the heading from the Liaison Committee in the United States. These are the standards from the Working Committee on Accreditation of Medical Education in Beijing. These are the World Federation's own standards for basic medical education. This is the first edition, published on paper in those days, of course, when we were in Copenhagen, 2003. The third edition of the World Federation standards is very nearly complete and will be on our website before the end of the year. And I very much commend the new edition of the World Federation standards. So how are we measuring that performance? Well, we've got to have some kind of criteria against which we are assessing the medical school and the medical course. And you notice that I'm using criteria for how good the school is, whereas standards for what the course should do. Two different words to keep them clear in our minds. And we need to have a process to see if those criteria are being met. So what are the criteria? What's the process? And this is a screenshot from our website, Guidelines for Accreditation of Basic Medical Education, developed by an international task force, which was essentially us and the WHO, and they form the follow-on, including many statements, including the IAMRA statement. We have to remember that our first speaker has been the head of IAMRA, but the IAMRA statement on the accreditation of medical education programs. And I do particularly commend that. It's very clear. So criteria that medical schools have to meet in accreditation, well, we have those on our website, and it's not a very long document. There are 20 lead criteria, and then each of them subdivided, and they include, is the accrediting agency eligible, which may be a government agency, may be completely independent, either is possible. Includes criteria for what the documentation about the accreditation of accrediting agency is like, and how it asks medical schools to examine their performance. I picked out just one particular criterion here about the need for a site visit. The accrediting agency must observe the school in operation, able to observe the normal operation with an appropriate team, evaluating the facilities, using many methods, sufficiently detailed, and the school must know what's coming when it has the site visit. And as I say, that's in the World Federation criteria for accrediting agencies. And that, again, is readily available on our website. It's easy to see there, a short document, easy to read. So we are working to examine if the school is meeting the standards, whatever standards are used in that country. And we are examining how it is actually performing, not only on paper, and by report, but how it actually is, and the accrediting agency has to look at how the school is working. And I have two slides just to talk about why it is essential to have a site visit. And these are just examples. This is a medical school, not in Africa, in Europe, in our wide definition of Europe. It looks a little suspicious from the outside because it's rather small. It looks even more suspicious on the inside because the building is falling apart and the only useful thing I can see is an empty Coca-Cola bottle. And one has evidence that it's a hopeless medical school because these are students, overseas students from India, as it happens, demonstrating in the street outside the medical school to say that the school is absolutely hopeless. It's appalling. This medical school, as I say, not in Africa, a long way away, it's actually in Kyrgyzstan, well to the east of WHO Europe. And I'm pleased to report that these students were sent a letter by the ambassador of India to the Kyrgyz Republic and were all sent to good quality schools elsewhere. But if you didn't visit a school like this, you wouldn't know how terrible it is. And this medical school is listed in the World Directory because we need to know that it's there. Another example of a medical school where, on experience, I can tell you that a site visit was necessary because I was actually at the site visit to this medical school, an extraordinarily grand building. I won't tell you which country this one is in. And it's not only got this big central building, but it has large, long arms of other buildings to either side. And as we were taken round the medical school, they said, we'd like to show you what is in this room. And they opened the door and there was a class studying. But I said, what's in the next room? And they said, well, no. So if you open the door to the next room, there's nothing there. And I went round the medical school, opening as many doors as I could, and almost nothing was actually going on. They had students there on paper, one or two rooms with students actually studying. The other rooms, it's not only that there were no students, there were no facilities for students to sit and study or to work on anything. So a site visit to this medical school told me that really it was of very poor quality, although on paper it looked all right. The other bit of evidence was that my interpreter took me on one side and said, if you fall ill, don't stay here. We'll get you to the country. It's safer there. So a site visit is necessary to assess the medical school. So in our program for the recognition, the assessment of accrediting agencies, we use a model like accreditation. It's medicine specific. We ask the accrediting agency to evaluate itself. We observe the accrediting agency in operation, both visiting, doing a site visit, and we observe it making decisions. And then we go to our own recognition committee for the final decision. The criteria I've already mentioned, updated 2 years, a year ago, and will now stay the same for the next few years. And here is a WFME site visiting team in action from Canada, the United States, and Sri Lanka. And this was a site visit to the Japanese accrediting agency, which is absolutely excellent. One of the things that was very pleasing from this visit and others was that the accrediting agency said, we don't think that we're just doing this to get improved or to so that we meet the criteria. We have actually found the World Federation a partner in development of our performance. Another example of a site visit, this time to another excellent accrediting agency in Indonesia. There's the chair of the site visiting team from Australia, from Sri Lanka again, same person who went to Japan, an assessor from the Czech Republic, and the team secretary, who was invisible, was from the United States. And this, as I say, was the accrediting agency in Indonesia. And there was the person representing the agency during the site visit. So that's the recognition program as it is. And as I say, the final decision goes to a recognition committee. Here they are. They are independent of the World Federation almost completely. Professor Sambo, who used to be the director of WHO Africa, is the person who's relevant to you. At the moment, this has been chaired by my predecessor, but he is going to step back soon so that there'll be all six members completely independent of the World Federation, and coming from the six regions of the world: Africa, the Americas, the Eastern Mediterranean, Europe, Southeast Asia, and the Western Pacific. So where are we with the recognition program? Now, this is a screenshot from the World Federation website again, and it shows in dark blue those countries where we have at least one accrediting agency that has been assessed by the World Federation and is working at good quality. In some of those countries, there are other agencies under assessment. In very large countries like Russia, of course, that may be necessary. Light blue means that that's something that's in progress. And you will see that there are really three main areas that are pale. One is in Europe, where we have only, in Western Europe, only two or three agencies already recognized. Eastern Europe is more well covered. That is going to change very quickly. We have agencies in Germany, the United Kingdom, Spain, Italy, Hungary, Switzerland, who are all entering into the process. The second place where there is not apparently much going on is Southeast Asia, which has the very big countries, India, Bangladesh. And there, we are hoping that there will be progress soon so that that part of the map turns dark. The one that is of interest to you, of course, is Africa. And I'm sorry to say that these countries colored dark are in our terms in the Eastern Mediterranean, but we have some hope of progress. We are first of all in process of assessing La Conférence Internationale des Doyens des Facultés de Médecins d'Expression Française, CIDMEF. And that's in process of application. And that has potential to accredit the medical schools of 20 countries in Africa, let alone others in Eastern Mediterranean and elsewhere. And it's very important because many of these 20 countries are ones with only one or two medical schools. So to have an independent view from experts from not just from other African countries, but from other French-speaking countries, France, Quebec, and elsewhere, that's a very likely to be a very effective way of turning the whole of French-speaking Africa dark blue on our map. And we're working not only with CIDMEF, CADMEF is the same organization with Africa, and CAMES is the overarching body for higher education in the French-speaking countries of Africa. So there is progress there. We are in correspondence with the Kenya Medical and Dental Practitioners Board. Some of the names are flipped there. And we're also in correspondence with the Medical and Dental Council of Nigeria. So with the English-speaking countries to the east and the west, we're moving along. And we're also in dialogue with the medical schools of Angola, which is the single biggest country in medical education terms in Lusophone Africa. So Africa, we are making progress at assessing the performance of accrediting bodies, and we hope that next time you look at that map, it is much darker and much more blue in Africa. So in conclusion, I believe, and I think all of the other speakers have said, that it's essential to ensure that medical education is as good as it should be. Even if you are short of money, even if the social circumstances are difficult, you need to be sure that the medical school is working efficiently. Accreditation is one of the tools to promote good quality. Good quality education is important for the patients that our students will serve. So we are supporting accreditation because it is good in the end for healthcare. And all those points are equally true in every part of the world. So thank you. And of course, later on, I will be very pleased to deal with any questions.
Thank you very much, David, for the presentation and also for emphasizing the need for global and local context. And also, for this has really shown the need for us to discuss, as Dr. Lape started off in the beginning. There's a lot of work to be done in Africa. You've given us hope. That's good. That some progress has been, there's some progress, but also AfriHealth really recognizes the gaps that we have in this area. And that's why this discussion is going on. So we have had, as I promised at the beginning, that we will be able to have discussions and questions. And during the time that we've had these presentations, there's been discussion on the chat, and some answers have been given by our speakers as they noted the chats. Thank you very much. I would like to highlight a few questions for you to answer, and some of the questions the speakers will be able to answer them, and others are just for discussion. So the first one was from Mosa, who said, who asked whether there's any work that has been done to map out the regulators and relationships across Africa, including Anglo, Franco, and Lusophone. And I think that goes to Lape. And Bill and Alan have given us some websites to look at where we can get some of these some of this information, and maybe Lape, you could say something about that question, whether there's been some mapping for Africa.
Well, what we have in Africa, we have an organization called the Association of Medical Councils of Africa, which is just about 20 years old. It was started with countries in the south, and as countries came from other parts of Africa, AMCOR was formed. It's largely Anglophone. We have 21 members. There's a challenge because of resources and language differences to get the Francophone countries in and the Lusophone countries in. The DRC is a member. Rwanda has converted from Franco to Anglophone and is one of the active members in the organization. We have a program to try and reach out to the Anglophone, to the Francophone, Lusophone, and the Arab-speaking countries in Africa. So there is an organization, and we share experiences, and we work together, and we're trying to create a federal system in the continent so that we could get ultimately to common exams, common recognition across borders, common assessment protocols. There are regions that have already taken that further where they are doing accreditation across boundaries. So in the East, those that are in those countries, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, all the participating countries, they accredit across borders. and the student cohorts that come out can now be registered in the different jurisdictions without having to do anything because there's common assessment. We're hoping to do it throughout Africa. So the issue of the analysis is always being done. And I'm the current president of AMCOA. And in my last year, my issue is to ensure that we bring in Francophone Africa, Lusophone Africa, and North Africa into the fore.
Thank you very much. Somebody else, still it's Mosa, who is saying that these country visits are expensive and this will go to David, I think, that can the post-COVID virtual world reduce this? Maybe you would like to say something more about the visits. Considering that Africa is really big, these country visits may be expensive.
Yes, I mean, of course, it is expensive to travel around, and we are very conscious of that. But I also would emphasize that when it at all possible, obviously difficult at the moment, it's very difficult to assess how a medical school is performing without actually seeing it on the ground. It's not like assessing a school of chemistry or of economics. I think we and accrediting agencies that we are aware of are very careful to try and minimize travel costs as far as possible. And so, for example, CEDMEF, which accredits schools in French-speaking Africa, is very careful to do so as economically as possible in terms of travel, even though there will inevitably be a greater cost if you have to bring some in from French-speaking Europe or from Canada. But it's we are aware of that as a serious problem. I think the other thing to say about travel in Africa is that, of course, while there are some airlines that have good networks within Africa, such as from Ethiopia or Kenya, there are many countries where, paradoxically, to get from one country to another nearby country, it may be quicker to fly through Paris or Brussels or London than it is to fly direct. And that's a worry, and I hope that that situation will improve generally.
I think just to add to that, site visits are critical. We do them on a cyclical basis every 5 years to the institutions. But the important thing is that you got to build capacity locally so that it's not all people coming from outside. And the post-COVID era has an impact. Our team would go out for a week. But because of the COVID things, there are things that we can do online so that your visit is short. It doesn't have to be a whole week. There are things that can be done prior to going on the visit. You don't have to wait on the visit. So there are aspects that you can use technology to make those assessments. But a site visit periodically is going to be necessary. And the key issue is there has to be government buy-in into these issues so that the issue of funding of these things becomes an issue of national interest rather than a private concern.
Thank you. And maybe to Dr. Pinsky, there's a fear that that accreditation increases migration. And that is a concern for many people. And this discussion has been going on the chat. Would you like to say something about that?
Sure. I'm very happy to, because I recognize it as a concern and could be an unintended consequence of something that, you know, should be for the good for everybody. I think the WHO and its workforce say that WHO's workforce strategy does have a statement that all healthcare workers as individuals should be allowed
to. Which I agree, market assessment and whoever serves it is.
Should be allowed to. Yeah, I don't know how that keeps happening, but should be allowed to work.
That is mean, first of all, it's...
Lara, please mute everybody.
So, I mean, WHO statement on workforce clearly states that individuals should be, healthcare workers of any kind should be able to work wherever they would like. Also, I think WHO encourages all of what I would call high resource countries to not affect the workforce in other countries by any mechanisms, and to be mindful of that. I think the accreditation activities actually assist countries that might be lower resourced that actually need more qualified healthcare workers. I can address physicians more than I can other occupations within the healthcare workforce. And I think it, because there is migration into those countries as well, and it's important to be able to document how people are trained, what they're capable of doing. And then we also have a situation of civil unrest, countries where healthcare workers are at risk and desired to get to someplace safer for themselves and their families. And I think that's important to allow as well.
Okay, thank you. I would like to call out Jennifer Nyoni from WHO Afro, who leads the health workforce for WHO Afro. Could you please, we'll give you 2 minutes to say something, and thank you for attending. Jennifer?
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for allowing me to speak. It's very nice to see some familiar names on the call. First of all, I'd like to apologize that we, as Afro, we missed on the Istanbul meeting, but we've been following closely and linking up with our headquarter colleagues. But just directly to speak to the issues on the table, we are very glad that as Africa, we are coordinating ourselves on this matter. We've been over the years, some names here, I'm sure are familiar with some attempts we've made as a regional office for the benefit of others. We are responsible for 47 countries of the continent. And so we've been trying to coordinate on this matter, and there are many bodies, as we heard in the preliminary remarks. So I think organizing ourselves into an umbrella body, like a forum like this, will help us a lot. In answering to one of the things, moderator, one of the things that we had planned ourselves was to map the regulatory and accreditation capacity in the region, or WHO Afro region. And this was not just for medical education, but for other professions as well, so that we can understand the issues that you already raised on this. So I think it will be very interesting for us in the coming year, due to COVID, of course, this is one of the activities that we had put on hold. So I think it would be a good place to start to work with you and what was raised in Istanbul, if we can map this and raise some of the issues that you brought on the table. So that's one of the things I wanted to speak to. So to really to thank you for this effort to coordinate ourselves and to be able to reach out as an institution to work with you. And I saw some of the comments on the chat, indeed would be happy to coordinate some of this work. And we've worked over the years with the WFME and also the Association for Southern Africa, SIDMEFS. We interact with them from time to time. But I think it would be good to put all these efforts together now that we are becoming a global village, even as a continent ourselves and also across the world. So just briefly, it's just to make our presence known, and we'll be happy to work with you and to see how we can push the agenda of some of the things that were raised in Istanbul. And the area of accreditation, as Professor Gordon has just shared, is true. that we do also have this directory, even the schools of other health sciences. We have some countries where diplomas are teaching diplomas and so on and all those things. So I think it is it's really a good effort to move towards how can we make it work for Africa in the interest of quality of care in our region. So this is just to make our presence known and to say that we want to be very actively involved with you and how we can put some of the recommendations of Istanbul to begin to happen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we are so glad that WHO Afro is here with us discussing this very important topic. We are almost coming to the end of our webinar, but I would like just to give this question and then ask the presenters to say a last word if they have something. So somebody is asking, what happens if an accredited medical school gets non-conformity during inspection? What corrective action process is taken? And maybe David, you could take this on.
I'm very happy to answer that because I can answer it by examples, not examples that I'm going to say exactly where, but examples that we have direct experience of. We have assessed accrediting agencies in countries of all kinds, very rich countries and very poor countries and everything in between. And I will make two comments. One is that the quality of the accrediting agency is not very closely related to whether the country is rich or not. There are countries which have limited resources, but who have worked hard to ensure the quality of the accreditation system, which is absolutely right. But the example I'm thinking of is of two very rich countries where they do not have an accrediting system, but they set one up and we sent a team in to look at it. And they commented that, of course, in our country, we have a large number of medical schools, but what we did not realize until we had a proper accreditation system, that there were two or three of them that were actually of very poor quality. We did not know, but without a system to assess them, we would not have known. And to answer the questioner's question, what do you do about it when the school is of poor quality? If the school can be rescued, can be made of good quality, then it should be. It's a job for the accrediting agency and the medical school to work together. Some schools are so bad, like that one I showed with the Coca-Cola bottle in, some schools are so bad that they should go. And the accrediting agency in that country is working to close the very bad schools. But schools that are potentially of good quality should be rescued.
Thank you very much. I would have loved to continue this discussion, but unfortunately we've run out of time. So I would just take this opportunity to thank all our speakers. Thank you so much for those presentations, and to say that those presentations will be available on the AfriHealth website, and all questions that have not been answered, we have a blog on the AfriHealth website where you can go and find answers and also continue the discussion. I'd also like to thank you all, the participants, for coming for this important webinar. I would like to thank the secretariat who are behind this, organizing all this. And I would also like to thank Faith Nawaji, who has worked very hard to make sure we have the speakers and actually started the proposal for us to put this webinar together. So Faith, thank you so much. Your work is appreciated. And thank you everybody for attending this webinar. And we'll continue the discussion. This is just the beginning, and AfriHealth wishes you all a very good afternoon or evening or morning, wherever you are. And those who are not members, please join AfriHealth because it's Pan-African and would like to work together to make things better for Africa. Thank you very much, everybody, for attending.